Call House Judiciary to order. It is 1:01 today, which I think is the earliest we have ever met. It's Wednesday, March 25th. Present with us today are Representative Klayman, Representative Grunberg, Vice Chair Keller, and I'm the Chair, Representative Ledoux. And excused today is Representative Miller. To begin with, I'd like just like to remind everybody to turn off their cell phone. We have two bills before us today, HCR 1, Governor Tribal Sovereignty and Jurisdiction, and HJR 3, Congress Native Tribal Jurisdiction and Authority. Both of them are sponsored by Representative Edgman. We had on the calendar HB 75, but we will not be hearing that today. First up is HCR 1, and we've got the bill sponsor, Representative Edgman, here with us today. And Representative Edgman, would you please place yourself on the record and brief the committee and also introduce your staff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Representative Bryce Edgman. I represent House District 37. Committee members, Madam Chair, thank you for scheduling the hearing on these two resolutions today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about a subject that I think the committee has somewhat been briefed on by a presentation that took place here a week, 10 days, 2 weeks ago by a young man by the name of Sam Godstein, who gave a presentation on a law review article that he had written on the subject of Alaska Native Tribal Justice. And the two resolutions before you are being put forward in tandem because they essentially are the same vehicle, however, being delivered to two different areas. One, of course, an HCR to the Governor of Alaska, and the second vehicle, HCR 3, to the Congressional Delegation. And I bring these resolutions forward to do a couple of things. One, to bring attention to the increased role that tribal entities in the state of Alaska can provide in terms of better law enforcement and criminal justice services at the local level, but as well to recognize the fact that the system that we've had in place, highly centralized, being provided through state agencies in large measure, has in many degrees, many instances, failed to succeed. And I would bring your attention to just a couple of statistics to back up that claim.
And I'm going to just cut you off for just one moment here because I want to announce that Representative Lynn has joined us. Excuse me. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to continue my point that I think that by recognizing that Alaska tribes can play a greater role in providing criminal justice services in Alaska, has a lot of merit and really deserves the attention that we as legislators and certainly as those in the executive branch and our congressional delegation can pay to the issue. I'd point to that in a number of Alaska tribal communities, actually a number of Alaska communities per se, that we're still facing severe problems related to poverty, related to alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, suicides, a number of other social ills that in some communities really are moving forward at a horrific pace to the point where they really are taking place at epidemic level. Now when I stand back and look, and I guess I'm going to make eye contact with Representative Keller, if I might, the Vice Chair of the Committee, because I know he's been working on the issue of smart justice or reformative justice, however you might term it. I think these two resolutions in the fact that Alaska tribes can play a larger role in providing criminal justice services fits in that category. And I would point to the state of Alaska, who has taken a number of measures to instill smart justice policies, and they have, in doing so, reduced their recidivism rate by a quarter, by 25%. They've saved about $3 billion in building new prisons. They've reduced their imprisonment rates by 10% and the crime rates by almost 20%. And so in arguing that Alaska tribes deserve more recognition, deserve clear, more consistent policies with our state agencies, deserve attention at the congressional level, that the Women and Safe Families Act would have provided had it been approved, are very worthy of our consideration in these resolutions. Madam Chair, I would also point out that the last 25 years there have been a number of studies from various commissions and boards and entities that have all essentially pointed to the same thing, that if we had more culturally sensitive law enforcement measures at the village level, that really, again, looking through the eyes of reformative justice, treated not only just the offenders, but also the victims and the community itself, so that we could bring down the recidivism rate, we could bring down the high percentage of young Alaska Native males that enter in our criminal justice system, perhaps at the misdemeanor level, at the minor offenses, and then graduate up into felony offenses and end up populating our criminal justice, our Department of Corrections primarily, at the rate of $158 a day or some almost $60,000 a year. So I think these resolutions, in terms of very narrow focus on promoting criminal justice measures at the tribal level in small Alaskan communities, has a lot of merit. I think in an era that we are in today of having to downsize state government, reduce spending not just in our criminal justice agencies, but in all facets of state government, that by giving Alaska tribes a greater role in misdemeanor cases and in minor offenses at the local level, we can reduce the amount of outflow, if you will, from villages into the criminal justice arena, and at the same time save the state of Alaska money and really help get rural Alaska directly on that pathway to reformative justice that we're trying to instill here broadly in the entire state of Alaska, rural Alaska, and the rest of the state notwithstanding. So if I might, Madam Chair, with those opening comments, if I could turn to my staff to directly walk the committee through both bills, if that's the wishes of the committee.
That would be great. But before you do that, I'd just like to note that Representative Foster has joined us. Yes, Representative Greenberg.
I would hope that you would allow, as the folks are going through the bill, if we have questions on an individual section, we could ask them at that time.
Yes, that would be perfectly appropriate. Representative Lynn?
Yeah, I don't know whether to ask now or to ask later, you know, after you do the sectional. But I've got some concerns here. Help me understand what this is all about. Does this relate to two separate systems of justice? One system of justice for natives, another system of justice for everybody else?
Through the Chair, Representative Lynn, what these resolutions call for, and as we know, resolutions, of course, are non-binding. We, you know, yes. For anybody who might be online, I would offer that distinction. But really what the first vehicle, HCL1, calls for is basically better communication, better recognition between the state agencies and the tribal entities that are providing largely circle sentencing or providing tribal court services, things of that nature at the local tribal community. And in no way do we suggest that the more serious offenses, the felony offenses, which is under the purview of state troopers and, of course, the law of the land as we know it here in Alaska, we're not suggesting that. We're suggesting that tribes be more active in terms of more minor offenses at the community level. And we're also asking that basically that the state of Alaska in the first vehicle, HCR1, take more time to engage state agencies to work with the tribes on a community-by-community basis to have a better relationship, to have a better recognition that maybe some of these more minor offenses could be dealt with in a culturally sensitive way at a local village in a manner that sort of arrests that certain behavior, pardon my use of that term, but really takes that young individual, the 14-year-old young man, for example, in Togiak who shot the dog and got deported almost immediately to McLaughlin, and 6 weeks later was able to be brought back home. Unfortunately, that individual did not go down the pathway of, you know, sort of the broken window theory of engaging in a more serious offense, and before you know it, he's a felon. He's in the criminal justice system for years and years, doing nobody any good and costing the state a lot of money. So that's what we're entertaining with these two resolutions, is that we just have a better dialogue to get better communication between state agency folks, and you know, hopefully at the congressional level, that maybe we could get a congressional bill similar to the one that was offered a couple of years ago that would provide for more recognition of more criminal jurisdiction for Alaska tribes. So, you know, we're asking for better communication, better dialogue. We're not providing any answers. We're not saying that these resolutions really would provide the framework that might be in place between the Department of Corrections or Department of Public Safety and Pika Village, the village of Manicotic in my part of the state or something. All we're asking is that we think that the Department of Public Safety is encouraged to work more closely with the village of Manicotic to employ any local measures through the local tribe there in terms of the more minor offenses that could be dealt with at the tribal level.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I'd like to have just two follow-ups, and that'll be it for now. When you say tribal government, you mean like the city councils, or what do you want to call them, in the various villages?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Lynn, Alaska has 229 federally recognized tribes, which is about 40% of all the tribes in the United States. And these are tribes that function at various levels. Some have very active tribal courts. Some are just forming tribal courts. Some have no tribal courts at all. And the ones that, if I may, the communities like Cake and other communities that have more active tribal courts have really seen very positive results in having engagement of the local tribal entity in terms of, again, misdemeanor offenses, minor offenses that do not involve felonies.
Through the chair.
What about non-natives who live in these primarily native areas? What about cultural sensitivity for them? I mean, are they subject to the tribal government if a non-native happens to be living there?
I'm going to ask my staff to answer if that's okay with the chair.
Thank you. My name is Tim Clark. I'm staff of Representative Edgman. Everything that HCR 1 would ask of the governor, in particular the second resolve, would depend on the state government specifically negotiating agreements with tribes to go over every detail of what that tribal jurisdiction would be, including what crimes would be included.
Donuts, everybody.
Donuts.
On the record, but donuts.
We're holding you to it.
Yeah, I know that.
Most likely, through the chair, Representative Lynn. Most likely, these agreements would have an actual laundry list of the various misdemeanors and other crimes that the state would agree to see greater tribal authority over, and also the agreements would include, in all likelihood, clear statements that the state would retain concurrent jurisdiction, which is almost always the case.
One final for now. I believe Anchorage is probably the largest native village, if you would, in Alaska. How does this affect the natives who live in Anchorage?
Representative Lynn, through the chair, as we envision it, it would not have a great effect on the native populations in Anchorage. It would be completely focused on Alaska Native villages and remote communities where we feel it would be very important to increasing their well-being to have greater authority, greater responsibility and accountability and greater capacity to deal with not only some civil criminal jurisdiction at the local level, but also to have their court systems and institutions brought up to a level that can effectively deal with crime committed within the community borders.
Thank you. Maybe more later.
Representative Keller and then Representative
Kleinman. Yeah, thank you, Representative Kleinman. Thanks for bringing the bill forward. I'll let you read the note first. Not for me, but anyway, go ahead.
May I interrupt you?
Sure.
I have the good fortune of having a second bill up down the hallway in resources. Can I be excused, Madam Chair, for
and
just
you're
a
you're going to give it over to your lifeline.
Is that okay with the committee?
Yes.
Hopefully this
the question is whether it's okay with Tim. As long as I got the question, oh boy, here you go. yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Tim, what is the definition of what do you mean in the title when you talk about the sovereignty of Alaska tribes? If you go by the dictionary definition and the common definition of sovereignty, it's governing without interference. So there must be, if you would define it.
Thank you, Representative Keller, through the chair. These resolutions in their current form, having emerged from the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, no longer touch on specific concepts of tribal sovereignty. Everything that these resolutions, and in particular the concurrent resolution number one that we're now discussing, can be undertaken outside of questions of official recognition of tribal sovereignty, because they simply depend on the state making very detailed, specific agreements, tribal community by tribal community, over an increase of their capacity to deliver justice at the local level.
Yes, go right ahead.
Tim, the title is there.
Representative Keller, through the chair, the title is an artifact from the first original versions of the bill as introduced that did go into matters of tribal sovereignty, and in fact we've been in discussion with alleged legal attorneys and the reviser who does write the short titles, and he informs us that he cannot change it to reflect the resolutions more accurately until it passes a body.
But before we go,
Madam Chair, can I interrupt? I think we need repeat what you just said.
Through the chair.
Through the chair.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair. I, in discussion with, and forgive me, I can't recall the man's name, and I really don't bring him up to reproach him in any way, but it was his view that it was highly unusual. I should say not illegal necessarily, but highly unusual to change the short title of the bill before it had passed one body of the legislature.
Well, Representative Gruenberg, we're not passing either of these out of committee today, so we can look into that.
Yeah.
If I could, Madam Chair, I want to build a little bit of context for my next question, because I actually, as we read through, like in one of the whereases, it talks about the crisis at hand, the dealing with the poverty, the lack of economic opportunity, alcoholism, drug abuse, et cetera, that we talked about. To me, I have a really hard time switching from trying to figure out how the resolution would address that, and I really struggle with that. But on the other hand, it's consistent. The message is consistent through the resolution that the answer is in local enforcement and local justice. Now that I can follow. In other words, rather than having local enforcement and local justice, that's very important. I mean, that's like to bring up next step, to be they have just federal justice and just federal enforcement would be a terrible situation for Alaskans. So, you know, I do understand the concerns, but I don't understand how the connection to a tribal government would address that any better than what this is the essence of my question. And if you've looked at the Constitution, and when we talk about local control, it's so specific in our Constitution. In Article 10, Section 2, quote, local government powers, all local government powers shall be vested in boroughs and cities. So when I read that, I think, well, shoot, we can get this job done here by maybe giving some justice responsibility back to the boroughs, you know, or to the boroughs, not back to the boroughs. So the borough, we have county courts, is set the equivalent of county courts and work on borough enforcement and policing. I mean, had you thought about going that route, you know, legislatively, you see, we could do that. You know, we can go in and build borough courts, you know, and enhance borough enforcement. But.
Thank you, Representative Chair, Representative Keller, through the chair. You might describe this as, say, a more direct approach, where these issues of attempts to alleviate crime and social ills in these remote communities have been discussed for decades. And what has often been identified as contributing factor is a kind of distance delivery of justice to these communities. And I don't mean only federal law enforcement, but state law enforcement as well, where unfortunately we've struggled to place law enforcement officers actually in various villages, both remote villages within boroughs, both remote incorporated small cities, and dozens and dozens of villages that exist in the unincorporated borough. This would simply be steps that already are within the authority of the administration to turn over certain responsibilities to these local communities when it comes to, by and large, more minor crimes, but serious crimes nonetheless, so that the communities themselves, rather than looking upon the general well-being and the general peace in their towns, rather than looking at, on it as, say, the responsibility of a trooper who unfortunately might be 200 or 300 miles away, they look upon themselves and their neighbors to be more engaged in helping to improve community well-being. I mean, there have been commission after commission assigned to look at these issues over the years, and almost everyone on those commissions has agreed that if you allow greater control, increased accountability at the local level, and you would see swifter response to violence and criminal activity, increased crime prevention, and increased rehabilitative rather than punitive sentencing models, which could help stop certain individuals from sort of entering into that long career of trouble.
I won't ask Tim to respond again, but I just want to make sure that my question was clear on the record, and just for a review, because we're not moving this today, it's for thought. But I have all the reports that we've had seem to enhance and point out the need for local control, local quick response, local enforcement. I can understand that, not a problem. My question was, you know, have you pursued the avenue that we have available to us under the Constitution, which is to organize as a borough, you know, and get a municipality and then maybe ask through the legislature, through the action legislature, to increase the local control that way rather than coming at it this way. And again, you don't have to respond. I think you did, you know, but I just wanted to make sure that, try to clarify my questions so that it was clear.
Thank you, Representative Keller, through the chair. We will certainly look more into that as a possible avenue.
Representative Taman, but before that, I want to clarify something. We were talking about the title and the term sovereignty in the title, and I'm looking at HCR1 right now, and I'm seeing a different title than in the CS for one. So the new title doesn't include the term sovereignty.
Madam Chair, I don't actually have the short titles before me. I know that I was able to persuade the reviser to change one but not the other. My argument for changing one was that the word sovereignty did not exist in any place in the original resolution.
We can look into that. Representative Klayman.
First, I want to make sure the version we should be looking at is version E, ECHO.
That's through the chair, Representative Klayman, that's correct.
And then follow up with what was the real question. I actually was on the wrong version of the bill, and now I'm on the right version of the bill, and that my question is no longer appropriate. Thank you.
We are on HCR1. Representative Foster, did you have a question? Or?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume Representative Klayman was done.
Right. I'm done.
Thank you. Okay, so I didn't want to step on your feet.
No, I'm on the right version.
Can you correct me if I'm wrong? This is how I understand this. But essentially, it's adding a tool to our toolbox, and that is, we're not mandating that communities have to go this route. And maybe I'll wait for Representative Edgeman to step in here. So, Representative Edgeman, my understanding of this bill is essentially that we're adding a tool to this toolbox. We're not mandating that communities accept tribal enforcement. And so we've got, in my situation, and in my district, I've got a lot of communities that have city governments. Sometimes we have some villages that don't hold elections and they don't have a city government. They're non-functioning. Maybe they're in place and they're non-functioning. Maybe they're not in place because they forgot to do their election and whatnot. And we have some situations where some of the communities have tribes that do have their act together and they're functioning. And so the way that I see this is that, you know, for the communities that want to have this tribal enforcement, that option is there. And so I just want to make sure that I'm not missing anything here. Is that correct?
Okay.
Representative Edgeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Foster, that's, I think, a fair characterization of what these resolutions are about. We're advocating a go-slow approach that in increasing the dialogue between, in particular, the HCR1, the state agencies, and the particular community in question, that that dialogue, that exchange would be on an individual basis. And like legislation we passed last year with Army VPSOs, we think it's very much at the discretion of the various parties involved. And you're right, some communities are going to be better prepared to have tribal court activities, while others may not have a tribal court at all. But as I understand it, there are about 100 tribal courts scattered around the state. Some of them are functioning pretty regularly, maybe unnoticed by us here in the legislature, but some are pretty active as we speak. But it's just to conclude through the chair, it's very important that any of this increased tribal activity take place clearly with the best interests of the individual community and its leadership taking the lead on it.
Thank you. Representative
Through the chair.
Yes, I'm just wondering whether if we let Representative Edgemond and him give their presentation, some of these questions might be answered during the course of that.
This is hopefully a quick question, and then I generally agree with you, Madam Chair, that we should get to the presentation that we've been haven't gotten to yet. Is it your general expectation in terms of any tribal entity that was was acting in this capacity that entity would be, it would at this point strictly relate to members of the tribe that were participating in these, in any kind of a tribal court system? It wouldn't apply to some individual who wasn't a member of the tribe, and then in addition, even for those that were members of the tribe, it would only apply to them if they had agreed to be subject to that jurisdiction. It wouldn't essentially replace state jurisdiction. State jurisdiction would be in place, and then by voluntary agreement, the member of the tribe could agree to proceed in one form or another before the tribal court through that voluntary agreement.
I would think that's a fair, through the chair, Representative Clayman, I think that's a fair way to put it. We have some smaller villages which are comprised of virtually 100% tribal members. We have some medium-sized, larger villages which have a broader mix of tribal and non-tribal members. But again, it would be the individual circumstances, I think, that would dictate the relationship between the particular state agency and the individual community.
And if I can add,
go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Clayman, when it comes to the HCR 1, it does make reference to something known as a civil diversion agreement. And late in the Parnell administration, they in fact, his Department of Law was involved with the negotiation of civil diversion agreements with Tananoc chiefs, I believe, as well as other tribal associations and entities. And my understanding of they never reached an agreement, but they did go some distance. And I know that at least one version of what was being discussed was designed so that someone arrested, say, by a state trooper or a VPSO would be given the option, basically, of having his situation either diverted to the tribe and their authorities or to continue through the state criminal justice system. So there are all sorts of ways that those questions could be addressed, but I haven't so far heard of the state entertaining any requirement that a non-tribal member would be subject to tribal justice system.
But you could have a situation, I would imagine, where if nobody is going to be subjected to it, unless that person is agreeable to being subjected to it, then why wouldn't there possibly be a situation where in a small village a non-tribal member is living, and why wouldn't you want to give that person the option of going through that system also?
Madam Chair, that in fact, according to my recollection of a draft civil diversion agreement that I have looked at, was in fact the case. Both tribal and non-tribal members, if they were members of the community, would have recourse to the tribal justice system if a state agreement were in place and the institutions were deemed to be well enough developed, then it would not only be tribal members, it could be a non-tribal member living in the community who could also make that choice.
But as I understand this resolution, number one, the details aren't ironed out in this resolution. This would be something which is basically saying that We think local control is the best way to go, and local control in many of these places is tribes, and that the governor and the tribes work something out.
That's exactly right, Madam Chair. We are simply advocating for this approach to seek more delivery of justice at the local level, more capacity and institution building, and more responsibility, frankly, and accountability at the local level.
Thank you. Do you want to proceed with your presentation now? And I'm sure we're going to pepper you with questions all during it, but at least you can get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, a lot of this is going to sound repetitive because we have been discussing a lot of the substance of the resolution. However, it is, in fact, designed to mark the state's willingness to work together with Alaska Native tribes on ways to alleviate crime and social ills in their communities. It urges the governor to establish clear policies across state agencies for increased collaboration and partnership with tribes, which we think where we believe there's a great deal of room for improvement in terms of more working together on these issues. And it encourages the governor to negotiate agreements with Alaska Native tribes that would increase their authority, responsibility, and capacity to enforce laws and deliver justice at the local level. It essentially, that covers it. There is a third resolve that asks the governor to conduct a complete review of the state's litigation against tribes, which it's already understanding that that to some extent is underway in any case, but it's our feeling that if the state does turn in a more collaborative posture with tribes, that some of the litigation underway would not be necessary. And like these other measures, we believe that that too would save us some money in times when the Treasury is a bit distressed.
Thank you. Does anybody have any further questions at this point?
Yeah.
Representative Keller.
I guess we could ask the Department of Law, but I'm really interested in what category of litigation would not be there with a more collaborative approach, because working with them, I just don't see that grid. But I guess my real question is, maybe just a request more than a response. But again, if you look at Article 10 of the Alaska Constitution, there's some really fun sections to that addresses the problem. And one of them is the home rule power option. You know, where an organized borough can form, a home rule charter for their borough under the guidance of whatever the allowance by law is to set that up. And then this statement is in Section 11, if any borough or city may exercise all legislative powers not prohibited by law or by charter. I mean, that goes really a long ways toward sovereignty, and as we throw the term around, and that term gets thrown around really a lot, I think it's really a word that can cause a lot of questions. But that is an option again, and I guess I'll repeat my question: Have you considered that? You know, is going through the organized what's set up for the Alaska State through the Alaska State Constitution?
Yeah, through the Chair, Representative Keller. I think the harsh reality and greater rural Alaska at this point is that even in the years when we had budget surpluses, when we had the ability, and I know this all too well as a House Finance member, I can rattle these numbers off to you, but in the last roughly 10 to 12 years, we've increased state agency spending from 105%. But even then, we still have 75 communities that do not have VPSOs. We have state troopers that are stretched far too thin. We have a Department of Public Safety budget that the Chair and Representative Klayman and others have seen up close that has capped the number of money going in the VPSO program as it is today, and taken six VPSO oversight troopers and exchanged them for general troopers who will be providing some of those duties. So where I'm going with all this is that, number one, the resources aren't there to effectively do the law enforcement services that are required, but to, I guess, contemplate that some of these poor areas of the state could form into boroughs, if I think that's where you're going. I just don't see that happening, these areas would, number one, have the will to become a borough, and number two, would have the financial viability to get something through the local boundary commission to actually form a borough. And so I think going forward, we're looking at small, remote communities with infrequent, if not any at all, law enforcement presence, really sort of fending for themselves in many degrees, many respects. And those communities where we can get troopers into are sometimes not able to because of weather conditions. And again, some of these offenses, and primarily most of what we're talking about, these two resolutions are the minor offenses. And so I've wandered around quite a bit with that response. I don't know that I've directly addressed what you brought forward, but I offer that in the sense that I don't see that there is going forward a better solution in these smaller communities than having tribal courts being more omnipresent.
Representative Keller.
Just a final clarification again to the question is that obviously if a borough incorporates, it has the power to tax, there's a land involved with, borough land and all that stuff, it does, it picks up, and that's the argument you're making, is increased accountability and responsibility, for people in your own community, and that's, I believe, is the spirit of our Alaska Constitution, and I'd sure welcome an opportunity to pursue the options on that. Thanks.
Representative Keller, did you have a question for somebody from the Department of Law? Because we do have somebody from the Department of Law online.
I can formulate one real quick off the cuff here, but Mary, if you're there, if you'd answer, and what is the general impression of the legislature telling the Department of Law to review your court cases? In other words, I just in my dealing with the Department of Law, I think that there may be some resistance, from them. I don't know, but Mary can comment on that. I can throw it out there now that she's on, and to ask if you have reviewed court cases and found some to be inappropriate with the tribes.
This is Mary Lundquist, Assistant Attorney General for the state, through the chair and representative. I know that currently the Attorney General is going through a process of reviewing litigation with tribes, and it's an ongoing process, so I don't think that the resolution with the legislature urging the governor and the Attorney General to engage in that process is going to be taken the wrong way, because it's currently underway already. And I apologize, but I forgot the second half of your question. If you could repeat it, please.
The second half is merely in the review process, and you just indicated what's going on. Have you found some of the litigation to be inappropriate that is in progress?
Through the chair, representative, I'm not personally involved in that ongoing review process, so I might not be the best person to answer that question. I think largely the litigation between the tribes and the states, is a fundamental dispute about the relative jurisdiction of the state and the tribes, and whether some of that might fall by the wayside based on a more collaborative relationship. That's entirely possible, but I'm not aware of any specific cases.
Thank you.
I've got a question for you, Mary. If the unorganized boroughs were to get organized And I guess this question applies to now the organized boroughs also. Would that mean that they would have a separate system? I mean, could they form courts, even if they were organized? What powers do they have as far as courts, as far as law enforcement, even?
I'm not intimately familiar with the workings of municipalities, but I think in the municipality language, they do have a court function. But, you know, I would really have to look carefully at that question. I think that they could certainly develop their own, a city can develop their own, having their own enforcement system for the criminal laws. So I think that incorporating boroughs, you know, that it would be, you know, they would be able to do some of the activities that are being encouraged of the tribes in the, under the resolution.
Thank you. So do we have any more questions for either Representative Edgemond or for Tim at this point? Representative Klayman.
I certainly recognize Representative Edgemond's comments about what I would describe in some respects as to a lot of the smaller villages that, and many in Western Alaska, your district, the tremendous, both the small size and the poverty in many of those villages and the challenges in these budget times. I think it's been a reality for a long time that many villages are too small to have a VPSO, and I think we're scaling back the VPSO program further under the current budget. And the tribes have for years and continue to play a significant role in those communities in levels at which we may not all fully understand, but the idea of getting them more integrated, I think, is a very positive effort. And I don't see this as a challenge to, I don't see this as a challenge to state sovereignty. I see it as working with the state. I did have a follow-up question for the Attorney General on the line, because when you were making comments about the power of municipal governments to create their own courts, particularly on criminal matters, I question that because looking at Article 4, Section 1 of our Constitution, there's a specific reference that the courts shall constitute a unified judicial system for operation and administration. And I've always had the understanding that in Alaska, the reason part of the unified court system is that municipalities have prosecutorial authority, but they still have to come to the state courts with their cases, so that there is only one justice system within the state for purposes of that court function. But I'm curious about your comments, and I recognize you may not have spent a lot of time researching that, but even further thoughts about municipalities starting to create their own court system in light of the constitutional provisions about a unified judicial system.
Through the chair, Representative, as I said before, I'm not intimately familiar with municipal laws, and there is a provision in the Constitution requiring a unified judicial system. Whether that would include the boroughs, I'm just not familiar with it, just that at least some of the prosecutorial authority would lie in the municipalities. But if you would like me to research that question and bring back an answer, I can certainly do that.
Through the chair, I guess I would say if you have some basis for believing in a municipality or a city would have the authority to create their own court system separate from the unified court system that's established by the Constitution, I'd like to see that research. If I certainly agree that they can and do exercise prosecutorial functions, but not court functions. And so if you have research that suggests there would be authority to create a court entity within cities or boroughs, I would be interested in seeing that.
Through the chair, Representative, I will gladly look and see what I can find.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Well, then I will open public testimony. And we have online, we have Mary Bishop from Fairbanks. Mary, would you like to identify yourself for the record and let us know who you represent?
Yes, my name is Mary Bishop, and I represent myself, and I'm from Fairbanks. I have submitted a few documents for the record.
And we do have that in front of us. Is there anything from that document that you would like to highlight for us?
Is it the document that says, what would Indian country really mean in Alaska?
Okay, where is that in the document, Mary?
It is an 8-page document that I submitted. It might have ended up under HGR3, but it's a lengthy document that was submitted to the state legislature several years ago, and the title of it is, and it's got the, and it's on the letterhead of the legislature, and it's entitled, "What would Indian Country really mean in Alaska?" Anyway, that's one that's important to look at. What I wanted to stress was, first off, that I support HCR1 if it is somewhat amended, but I agree to go slow, and so I oppose HGR3, which gets us into the federal realm. I believe that we can, through lack of vigilance, unintentionally unravel the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act and get lower 48 Indian reservation status over many small to large portions of Alaska. Over the last few decades, many efforts, fortunately unsuccessful in my opinion, have been made to attain Alaska Indian Country. Native lands moving into federal trust is one of the ways, probably the easiest way, to accomplish that goal. And if you recall, the first version of these two bills asked for support of moving lands into trust status. Many people think that we can't have Indian Country in Alaska because of the 1998 Vivitai decision, in which the U.S. Supreme Court said no Indian Country existed in Alaska. But we can, through a different legal method that's being attempted right now. Yes, indeed, we can, and efforts to do so continue. The state is involved in a lawsuit right now, which I would certainly hope is not dropped, arguing this issue, and it's called the Accio Check case. I encourage you to learn about the case and read some of the documents which describe its distinct potential for unraveling INCSA and establishing Indian Country. Attorney General Richards has asked for and received an extension until mid-July to either file the state's next brief in opposition or choose an option to drop the case entirely or to address the issue through congressional action. Once again, that is the Accio Check case, and it would allow Native and lands to be placed into federal trust status, that's Indian Country status, free of state taxation and regulation.
Excuse me, Mary, are you looking at version E? I think some of your comments may be addressed to the original version of this bill, as opposed to version E, which is a much more limited form of the resolution than it previously was.
That's true. What I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee is that we can still get Indian Country if we're not careful on how we address the resolution. For example, the resolution encourages the committee to ask the governor to look at the litigation that is underway right now. Fine, look at it, but also include some resolution, some resolve in there that opposes establishment of trust lands in Indian country and encourages innovative thinking in order to address through state action and not federal action the crucial issues of rural justice. I thought, for example, when I first heard and read Mr. Gottstein's presentation to this committee, I thought that I would hear more about the need to move tribal lands into federal trust, but I was pleased that I did not. Instead, I heard and read in the last 4 or 5 pages of this paper an advocacy to work with methods probably now available in the state on avoiding the federal government and the Department of Interior. The state of Alaska, a quote from this paper, the state of Alaska is better positioned to find a long-term and meaningful solution to Alaska Native tribal jurisdictional issues than this Congress.
Mary, we are right now on public testimony with respect to one, which does not deal with Congress at all.
Correct. Mr. Gottstein emphasizes that we can do it through the state and not through going to the federal government. I agree with him, and as was mentioned earlier, it's consistent with the press release that I put in on the record from former AG Michael Garrity, where he describes a template that there was an agreement before the state, between the state and the template agreement between the state and the tribes, allowing in certain places, quote, tribal civil remedies in lieu of state criminal prosecution. And this would perhaps meet the concerns that were expressed by Alaska Supreme Court.
Mary, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes, and you've already gone significantly over that. So if you could just wrap it up, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, I would encourage you to go slow. Pass an amended HCR 1 and reject HJR 3. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Don't think we have anyone else online. We have Ron Somerville in the audience. Ron, would you like to come on up and identify yourself? And right now we're just on HCR 1.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Ron Somerville, but I signed up the sign to discuss HDR 3. Did I put it on the wrong page?
No, you didn't. I'm reading the wrong page. My apologies.
I accept that apology. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, well, we'll call you back when we talk about HJR 3. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to talk about HCR 1? Well, not seeing anyone, we're going to close public testimony about this now. As I mentioned, I'm not going to be moving this bill today, and we may open up public testimony when we reconsider the resolution. Are there any more comments from the committee, or does the committee have any more questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Greenberg.
First of all, I appreciate you're doing this. I'd like this to be to the representative if I could.
Certainly.
And you don't necessarily need to answer the questions now. They're things to think about. Since they appear to be requesting action by the governor, my first question related to the form. Why did you choose this as opposed to some other method? It could have been a temporary act or whatever. That's just a general question. Secondly, if we're going to, and this is not in any particular order, if that's okay, since we have two bills, it helps.
Would you like the representative to try to answer the question before you went to the second question?
Not particularly, because it may be that he wants to have more time. I just kind of want to put these on the record.
I could.
Sure, that's fine.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think I would go back to the comment about going slow with all this. It's our thinking as we researched what avenues might be available to promote greater... I'm sorry about that. The mic seemed to get real hot there for a moment. But that these resolutions... would speak to encouraging a process that really is already underway, and a process that, as we heard from our, as we've heard, I think many years in a row now from the Chief Justice, as they have given their address to the joint legislature, the court system itself is in fact moving forward on a number of items that HCR would promote, and through the resolution said, hey, appropriate for the state agencies now to begin themselves working more directly with the tribes, again, on an individual basis. And as we did research for these resolutions, largely conducted by my staff, Tim Clark, we did not find any one state statute that we could put anywhere, that we could create any kind of ironclad requirements or must-haves or, any requirements that would move this dialogue further along. We thought it was more appropriate to have the resolution to hopefully get approved by the legislature and lend gravitas to that discussion that really, for all intents and purposes, is going to take place whether these resolutions get passed or not.
Thank you.
Other things that might be considered, and this is just...
Fair representative.
Yes, thank you. Other things that might be considered is whether the current administration would be interested by executive order and possibly some departmental realignment to assist in this process through the chair.
Through the chair, back to Representative Grunberg, it's my understanding that they are interested in that. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak for the Walker administration, but I can paraphrase what has been described to me as not only their support for doing just that, but also for, I think, approaching it very judiciously, knowing that in dealing with Alaska tribes, there's an involving landscape, everything from jurisdictional issues to the authority of tribes to really building relationships between the state side of the equation and the tribal entities themselves.
May I continue, please?
Yes,
some of my comments are very minor, and some of them are less minor, and I'm just kind of in any order, if that's okay with the chair. On the concurrent resolution, if you would look at the second whereas clause, and I don't know if this was when the representative or Mr. Clark was speaking. I think it was you, representative. The various issues, problems. You mentioned specifically suicide. Mm-hmm. And as we proceed, maybe you would consider a friendly amendment to include the word suicide in there.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think that would be a well-intentioned and acceptable addition to the resolution.
And may I continue, please?
Yes.
With some of these, and some of these are just comments and suggestions, like the second whereas on page 2, dramatically higher. Possibly we could have some figures in some of these if that comes to it. Just a thought. And then this, you're doing the resolves. One thing that may be of some assistance would be to ask the governor in this case, or potentially the attorney general, to report back on what did they do, what you're suggesting. I just think we should have some feedback on this. And one other comment I had on the joint resolution, which deals with...
Representative Greenberg, I'm trying to keep these two things relatively separate because we're going to have public testimony on the other also. So
I'm sorry, I thought we were taking... Okay, well, those are my thoughts here, and I'm very glad that we're doing this. Thank you for giving the leeway.
Thank you, Representative Greenberg. Does anybody else have any questions for the bill sponsors or comments? All right, well, thank you very much, Representative Edgman, and I don't know why you're thinking about leaving because... because the next item on the agenda is the HJR 3.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruber.
If you would allow me to ask a question now.
With respect to...
To the joint resolution. It's a question, it's a threshold question.
Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you very much. When I read this through, this seems to be directed at a particular bill that was introduced in the last Congress, I gather, that didn't pass. Yet we don't have a copy of, unless it's a huge bill or something, I couldn't tell really what the bill did. And I'm just wondering, are we going to get a copy of this or what? It's hard to endorse something when you don't know what it is.
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, that bill in its entirety, the one referenced in the resolution, was made part of the bill packet.
Maybe I just missed it. I'm sorry if I did. So it should be in here.
Senate Bill 1474.
I don't seem to have that.
Well, now you do.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm missing an entire packet. Okay, I got two now. That answers my question. Thank you very much.
All right. Representative Edgman.
I defer to my staff, Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Clark.
Thank you once more. This is Tim Clark, staff to Representative Edgman. The two resolutions before the committee today are very closely related. The preambles are nearly identical. It's only the resolves that differ. The goals are also very closely related in terms of trying to address devastating social strife in rural communities. HJR 3 is directed toward Congress, and the resolve is one resolve asking them to introduce legislation substantially similar to the Alaska Safe Families and Villages Act of 2013. That federal legislation would have established a pilot project to provide just a number of Alaska tribal communities with increased federal funding for their tribal courts and law enforcement needs, enhanced authority over domestic violence and child abuse neglect, greater local law enforcement responsibilities to combat drug and alcohol abuse, and improved coordination between federal, state, tribal, and local law enforcement agencies. And it comes back to the recommendations of one task force and commission after another over a 25 or 30 year period, where many of them concluded over and over again that greater control, greater responsibility at the local level would lead to
swifter response to violence and criminal activity, increased crime prevention, and sentencing models that were more sort of culturally appropriate, more rehabilitative as opposed to punitive in some but not all cases.
Thank you. Any questions? Right, then I'm now going to open public testimony. And we will begin with Ron Somerville.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Somerville. I live in Juneau. And I'm just talking about HGR-3.
Yes, and could you identify, are you testifying on behalf of any organization or yourself?
I'm testifying on behalf of myself.
All right.
I was hesitant to talk about this because I'm not an expert in this arena, but I've had some experiences in areas that might have some relationship to what's happening here. And I think Mary Bishop touched on one thing that concerns a lot of people, and that is the fragmenting of the state's jurisdiction in creating some sort of anomaly, which exists primarily in reservations outside. But Alaska is different in this case because the number of tribes, 229, was not connecting necessary land masses, creates its own problem. I'm just talking about the other side of the issue. Specifically for this, one, I want to say right up front, having grown up in a small Native community myself, I appreciate and I'm really thankful for Representative Edmonds' attempt to bring some of these to light, because I think there's serious problems. They've been documented in a number of cases, so I don't need to do that over again. But the problems in the village is a problem that you as a legislature have and they as a community have. And we haven't addressed them very well in many cases, and I agree with that. However, the question is how much recognition of tribal jurisdictions is the answer? I mean, it was brought out by Representative Keller. Are there other options available here? And I guess that's what I would like to say is I would support giving additional jurisdiction to tribal governments, one, if they demonstrate that they can handle that. I come from Craig. Craig and Kulak have had some examples of tribal government, tribal courts issuing proclamations. There was a case in Washington of two people from Kulak buzzing a resident of Washington. The tribal courts petitioned the court system to allow them to administer justice. They did, and it was an abysmal failure. I'm giving you an example of a failure. I can also cite some where there's been examples of successes where really violations of any civil code, where the tribal courts actually took action and administered some sort of local justice, and it worked. The kids were, they straightened up and they flew right and were good members of the community, so I appreciate that. However, the conflicts with the state constitution are what concerns me. When I look at this here, what's proposed in HGR 3 is for Congress to do something and to pass something and to provide more jurisdiction and authority to the tribal courts. After living through D2 and subsistence in particular, there's a lot of unintended consequences that occur with the federal government passing legislation which we have no control over. I would say there's one thing in this and that you should do, and that is require that the state of Alaska must concur in any action by Congress administering giving any authority, that it must be concurred upon by the state. Trying to avoid the unintended consequences that occurred. I can go back and give you a litany of things that occurred in the passage of the subsistence provision in federal law, but almost everybody agrees right now it's been a horrible mistake in many cases. We have a fragmented system, and I don't think you want that in our court systems. However, we give the jurisdictions to the tribal courts. And again, I certainly applaud the representative for bringing this forward. I'm sympathetic, really sympathetic to the problems because I experienced some of that. My dad was an alcoholic in Craig, and I'm not very proud of that. But I'm just saying I know what it's like to have a fragmented community, fragmented family. So anyway, thanks for hearing me. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in the right room.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
This is not for Mr. Somerville.
Not for Mr. Somerville. Can we excuse Mr.?
Of course.
Thank you. And we'll take the next testifier, and then when you have a question for the BIM sponsor, we'll bring that back up.
Okay, that's great.
All right. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify? All right. We have, again, Mary Bishop from Fairbanks online. I think, Mary, you've probably touched on a number of the things that you probably meant to touch upon when we discussed HCR 1, but if there's anything additional that you would like to say in three minutes, you're certainly welcome to testify again on HJR 3. So just for the record, Mary, do you want to identify yourself and tell us who you represent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Understanding that I was talking about HCR 1 and HCR 1 and HCR 3, I'm just going to read one comment that I just read today on one of the documents that you were submitted. It is tribal jurisdiction in Alaska. In years to come, the trend in Alaska appears to be moving toward increased collaboration between the state, tribes, and their respective courts. The two systems have much to share with each other. Ultimately, the more access to justice Alaska's tribal members have, especially in the remote villages, the better for our state's health and safety overall. I encourage you to go slow. Not pass HGR 3 and amend H. Oops, I can't say that. I'm just amend HGR 1. Thank you.
Thanks very much for testifying again. Seeing no one else, and there's no one else online, I'm going to close public testimony for now. And is there anyone who has any questions for the bill sponsor? And or comments. So, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Through the chair, if I may have these through the chair. Dialogue for a minute here. This bill appears to me to urge our delegation to introduce something similar to a federal bill that was entitled the Alaska Safe Families and Villages Act of 2013. It's very specifically directed, and my questions will similarly be very specifically directed. We have the bill, but I can't tell from this, and I was at one time I worked back there, I should know better than this. Apparently the bill was, quote, reported with an amendment. Is the bill in front of us, it has a calendar number, is that the bill that contained the amendment? Was the amendment in the form of a committee substitute? We don't seem to have a committee report. What happened to the bill? Tell us more about this.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg, through the chair. As I recall, the Alaska's Safe Families and Villages Act was originally introduced, I believe, as early as 2011. So by the time it reached the 113th Congress, second session, it had in fact been, you know, some work had been done on it. I don't know specifically, I can't tell you today, here and now, specifically what the changes were going forward.
But then let me, if I may, if we're being asked to endorse something, I, for one, would like to see exactly the text of what this is, to see the committee report or whatever it is. I'm interested in seeing, because those reports often contain not only the arguments for the bill, but the minority views, to see the problems, what there were, and to know what the status is. Obviously, you can't answer this today, but if I'm going to vote on something, I need to know a little more about it, and I'll just leave it at that.
go ahead.
Representative Greenberg, through the chair, I would point back to the language of the resolution, which is requesting legislation substantially similar, which can be interpreted as going a bill that would include the major provisions or the you want a more specific
the chair.
Definition of a substantial.
Yeah, we're unfortunately a bunch of lawyers around here, and then we need to see this stuff. Leave it at that. And even those who aren't are tagged with us. Yeah, but you know, we need to know what we're doing. I'll leave it at that. Please get it for us.
Madam Chair, if I could also add, in terms of some of the public comments, the man who in the room, forgive me, his name escapes me.
Mr. Somerville.
Ron Somerville had expressed worries that the in endorsing federal legislation, that the state would somehow be run roughshod over. And if you do read the Village Safe, I'm sorry, the Alaska Safe Families and Villages Act of 2013, it has provisions where, number one, the floodgates are not being opened on these ideas. It is a demonstration project that is being put forward by the federal legislation. A handful of villages, conceivably. Number two, every step along the way, village eligibility would depend on it having first negotiated an agreement over these exact same issues with the state of Alaska. No village would be eligible for the demonstration program had it not first had an agreement with the state of Alaska over these matters in place. The state comes first in this legislation. And in terms of Mr. Somerville's misgivings over the capacities of these tribal institutions, the federal legislation also addresses, in terms of each village's eligibility, the capacity of its specific institutions, the quality and thoroughness of its constitution, its tribal constitution, the quality and thoroughness of its ordinances and laws, and the fact that all of those institutions and capacities would be reviewed by the Department of Justice before they'd be allowed into the program.
Thank you. Did you have any further questions, Representative Greenberg?
Yeah, thank you. And I'm talking to the text of your proposal here, the bill. The language, the key language, is found on page 3 in the last whereas and the resolved clause. And it looks to me like, regardless of what else is in the federal bill, the interests you have are certain provisions involving the establishment of a demonstration project. That's what you're asking us to endorse here, I guess. If that's all you're asking us to endorse, then that may be all we need to have in front of us. I'm trying to maybe focus your research a little bit through the chair. So, if there are other things in the bill that are irrelevant to what you're asking for, then we really don't need to see that. And my comments should be taken as limited to whatever it is you're asking us to endorse in the bill. And part of the problem was highlighted in Senator Sullivan's address, something I didn't know, and that is very few votes were taken on the Senate floor, apparently, at least last year. So I think what they're doing is combining bills, or maybe limiting them to appropriations or something. I don't know what's going on back there. But if we're going to be asked to endorse something specific, that's what I'd like to focus on, so we can have our discussion discussion and vote on that. And I'll leave it at that. I'm trying to be kind. I'm not trying to be a, make it more difficult.
Representative Klayman.
Just a couple of clarifications. It's my understanding that the 2013 Act was supported by both Senator Murkowski and then Senator Begich.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Klayman, the initial bill was amended by Senator Murkowski on the Senate floor to exclude Alaska Natives from it, but she later changed her position and co-sponsored a similar bill with then Senator Begich.
And then one other follow-up, and Representative Greenberg kind of touched on that. I'm assuming then Senator Murkowski would still be supportive of the bill, but any idea where Senator Sullivan is on this bill?
Through the chair, I don't have any idea because I have not had any correspondence with him, but I think this conversation around the table, actually for the last couple of hours, from what little I understand about Congress's treatments of actually the jurisdictional issues in general with Alaska tribes, it's been a struggle because clearly through the Supreme Court case of 1998, the Venati case, where the U.S. Supreme Court basically unanimously said that that under ANCSA, the 1971 case that transferred $44 million acres and $1 billion to the state in exchange for all title and all sovereignty to their land, the U.S. Supreme Court basically said very emphatically that Indian reservations, Indian country, does not exist in Alaska. So as I read through what I have read through on the legislation that Senator Begich and then later Senator Murkowski supported, it tried to work around that distinction, trying to address this in the epidemic problems of social issues with Alaskan Natives, while at the time recognizing that Indian country didn't exist, at least, or largely didn't exist in Alaska. So it's been very problematic, and for Senator Sullivan or Senator Murkowski to take additional time to consider the issue, I don't think would be unjustified, because it is a complicated issue from that standpoint. And so I would look forward to talking to Senator Sullivan and Senator Murkowski. And I had actually, as we do in the House chambers, I had my mic raised to ask Senator Murkowski a very question, but I didn't have chosen because there was about 15 people ahead of me. And I chose not to ask that question to Senator Sullivan, but would prefer to talk with him in a more private manner on the issue.
Isn't there one place in Alaska where there is Indian country?
Metlakatla. Yes, Metlakatla, Madam Chair.
So, has this idea been tried in Metlakatla yet? That would seem like a great place to start things out, where you wouldn't have the problem with Indian country versus non-Indian country.
Well, again, our resolution, Madam Chair, respectfully addresses the other 228 or so tribes and their systemic problems with providing criminal justice services and the attendant social problems, truly at epidemic levels. I'm not well versed on the Metlakatla situation. I can say, generally speaking, that I don't think that they experience the same levels of social disruption and violence and what have you as the other Alaska villages. I may be mistaken, but that's my general understanding.
Thank you. Any further questions for either the bill sponsor or for Mr. Clark? All right. Well, thank you very much. And it is 2:30. Is there any other comments? Then this meeting is adjourned. We will meet again at 1 o'clock on Friday.